This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the first workshop of the day for you. This workshop is focused on nonprofit organizations and a certain fact about them. Nothing is really static in life. It's not frozen in time. People change. You're not the same person you were when you were running around with the youth, and you're not the same person today that you're going to be in 10 or 20 years if the world stands in 10 or 20 years. You're going to change, be influenced by things in your life, by choices you make, directions you take, and places they take you. And that holds true for every nonprofit organization represented at REACH. It's probably not exactly the same organization it was when it was started. And if the world stands, it's not going to be the same organization it is today. There are going to be different faces involved with the organization, whether it's on the board or in operations. Sometimes program changes very significantly. Sometimes even church constituency changes. People who start supporting your organization aren't people who are still supporting it 40 or 50 years down the road. We live right now, and as you think about your nonprofit organization in our opening session, we're more focused on where are you right now. I selected three brethren to serve on a panel and help us. They each have experience in a different slice of the nonprofit world. Very interesting to me, as I talked to them first individually, and then as we kind of talked together as a little team, it was not far into it that I learned that I could have just picked any one of them, and we could have had a dialogue, a back and forth discussion, and they would have had more to say about a nonprofit organization changing course, confronting a change, working through a problem. There was enough material with Ken or Daryl or Tim to just go one-on-one with them and talk. We're not going to address every problem that a nonprofit organization has. We're not going to address every change that maybe you're thinking about. We've narrowed it down. We're going to go in a couple of directions. We have six general questions going to ask. I'm going to first direct those questions to one of the brethren, and they can give whatever response they have to it. The others can pitch in with a little story or example or a thought. We've got six questions we want to cover today. I want to let the three panelists introduce themselves. They'll give their name, where they go to church, what organization that they're affiliated with, and they serve in different roles. Maybe board member, maybe administrator, and maybe a different stage in their life. They were something else, but they'll give a little bit of a flavor of what type of an organizational background they're from. We'll start with Ken, and then Daryl, and then Tim, just briefly.
Yeah, well, good morning. My name is Ken Burkholder. I live in New Holland, so I'm not far from here. I serve on the Anabaptist Financial and Foundation Board and Open Hands, and I'm also a council reference for NYP, serve on the Silver Spring Ministries Board. I'm sort of ashamed sometimes to say how many boards I serve on because I'm not boasting about that. But my perspective is going to be a lot from a board perspective.
I'm Daryl Martin, and my wife and I attend Faith Mennonite Fellowship in Denver. We live about 20 minutes from here, and I serve on the Olive Branch Mennonite Missions Board. I serve there as chairman, and I have enjoyed our discussions already on this panel, and I hope we can have an enjoyable time today discussing it as well.
I'm Tim Weaver, Fresh Start Training Center, members of Fresh Start Chapel. We are in Southern Indiana, and my history is largely to do with Fresh Start. I started there in 1991 as a single fellow in a VS role, progressed through several different staff roles within the organization, and have been in administration now for the past 20 years.
Okay, thank you.
I failed to mention I attend the Peckway Mennonite Church in New Holland under the Weavernite Conference.
Thank you. Okay. Workshop title is Course Correction. Now you're thinking about your own organization and where you're at today. Remember, that's where I want you to think about, where you're at today. So the topic is course correction. You only correct course when you think you are off course. And maybe everything is just right on course where you're at. Okay? Well, maybe you can learn something for the future, but we're looking at where we're at. And when you look at where you're at, sometimes you realize you're not exactly where you want to be in the way you're relating with your churches, where your finances are running, with your staffing, and maybe even with some of the program direction you have. First question, this question is going to Daryl Martin, is whose job is it to do the steering in the organization? Whose job is it to actually steer and set course?
I think from the perspective of steering the ministry, that's not the only one providing direction, but that's the one that's choosing direction, choosing which way we're going. And certainly from my perspective, I would see it as the board's job. The board is responsible for that steering, for the job of governance begins with, and part of that is a clear vision. Knowing what you want to be doing, as well as your values and how you're going to do that, how that's going to be carried out down through administration. For us currently, we're in the process of changing course as we consider the board and its job of governance. A number of things changed just within the last year. We went from a part-time administrator to a full-time administrator. And so in that change, we realized that we needed to, as a board, have more forward direction for our administrator rather than as many items, ground level, so to speak, things coming to the board. And so we realized to be more efficient with our board meeting time, to be efficient for our administrator, we needed to begin looking at some more structured, detailed board policy. And that's currently what we're in the middle of now, working through that. This was prompted primarily by new and younger board members coming on, where we find ourselves now and just within the last 5 years, where we no longer have the founder people involved directly with the board. Those founder folks, people are still around, and with all respect and great appreciation for what they did, we found ourselves at a place where we needed to consider that vision and make sure that we are where we want it to be in that. And so that, and the second part with that was some underlying, sometimes not as underlying, maybe frustration from the staff of direction. And so we realized that we needed to correct that as a board. And so I would say certainly that the board is the one responsible for that steering. A short acronym, or a short that I think about as I think about the board and their response and how to do that. I use the three letters CIA. We're not part of the CIA, but we are to communicate. And that is communicating with the Father to understand His heartbeat. We can need to communicate as a board, as a team. We need to be working together as a team. We need to communicate with administration as well as with staff on the field. So we're the ones steering, but we're taking other things into factor. And then we need to be intentional about that. We need to, we can see a problem, we can see something that needs correction, but unless we're intentional about that, it's not going to change. I think it's Dave Ramsey quotes about debt. You can't wander into it, or in this situation, a problem. You can wander into it, but you're not going to just wander your way out of it. You're going to have to be intentional about it. And sometimes course correction, that steering needs to be intentional. And then third, is it action? We can communicate and discuss a problem, and I think sometimes boards may have that reputation of, you know, we rehearse things, but there needs to be action. That doesn't mean we do it all, but that means that there is action that comes from that steering. So,
thank you. Ken, you got a word to chime in there? Or no?
Well,
Well, I support what Darrell says. You know, the board needs to make sure it embraces vision, because vision, mission, and core values are the fundamentals of the board of directors' responsibility. And they, as a board of directors, they have to be careful that they're not become managers, and who then tends to the vision, who then tends to the mission. And the board can get preoccupied on the details and micromanaging it. And when that becomes negligent, the organization will drift. It will suffer, because there's no one as watching the vision and the mission.
Tim?
Yes, just a couple observations. Agreed with board leadership. A couple danger points is that long-term ministry leaders and long-term board members can tend to stagnate and this is the way we've always done things. And I would see that as a danger zone. Another danger zone I would see is sometimes when you hire ministry personnel, they come in with a very zealous spirit at times. And sometimes in that zeal, they're not always aligned with the direction of the ministry's leadership. And so I believe both of those are some danger zones. Creates opportunity to listen, to ask good questions, and then to make balanced decisions from the board.
Okay, thank you. One thing that Darrell said is that it begins with the board, and it's true that it ends with the board. Who's an administrator in here? Or you work in staff role? Raise your hand. Okay, those are the people who can be fired or who can walk away. If you're on the board, you're there at the end, and you deal with what's left. So you better be there on the front end of it. Let's go to the second question, which is, how can you actually tell if you're off course? How can you look where you're at and say, well, are we actually where we were supposed to be? How do you know if you're veering off course? And Tim, would you take that first?
Sure. We had a situation. Fresh Start Training Center was founded on working with men from our county jail. Our founder had been in jail ministry for 6 years prior to the founding of Fresh Start. In the first 10 years of Fresh Start, 85 to 95, we had a significant shift in attitude for the men coming into the program. And so we went from men just really having a desire to change to our courts offering a man a discounted sentence. Sometimes it was 8 months at Fresh Start in lieu of 2 and 3 years in jail or prison. And so we don't need to pray about that decision. And so our men were coming with a prison escape mentality that created some significant issues for Fresh Start. We couldn't police dog things fast enough to stay ahead of some of these fellows. And so our staff reflected, our board listened and looked into it and reviewed things. And the board came back with a decision that we don't want to cut out jail ministry. As a matter of fact, jail ministry is still a very vital part of Fresh Start. But we did go back to our courts and say, look, it's not working very well. We need to have men from the jail and prisons to serve their time first. Once their time is served, our doors are wide open. We're willing and ready to work with them. Consequently, you had a situation where the choice is now back to the street or Fresh Start for training, and the street became pretty attractive at that point. And so within that whole scenario, we had a very significant shift. Within about a year, year and a half time, we went from 95% inmates as our clients to about 95% Anabaptist people. Our phones rang off the hook with our own Anabaptist people calling and looking for answers in life. And so, large shift, again, orchestrated by our board as they listened to the events of the training center. So, yeah, today, jail ministry is still very much part of us. We've provided chaplaincy services to our county jail for 39 years total. And so, as we look at it, we have a problem. The board listened, the board reviewed, the board gave direction, and there were solutions that became very profitable.
Thank you, Tim. Ken?
question again?
The question, how do you, where, if you are on course, how do we know if we're veering off? Any comment you want to throw in?
Well, I think, as Daryl mentioned, about being in communication with the Lord, when you're a board member, you really need to stay in tune with what is your mission as a board member. And there are sometimes those little intuition things that pop up that you question, is this really the way we should be handling this? But it feels awkward at a board as a board member sometimes to be the only one to bring it up to the table, because you might be the only guy with this strange thought. But you can't afford to neglect to bring it to the table. So I think it's very important to bring those things to the board table, to the board's attention, or to the administrator, and get the pulse. That's where a lot can be nipped in the bud. Your constituency. Sometimes you have constituency, say, tap you on the shoulder, a supporter, a long-term supporter, a former board member, and bring things to your attention. Depending who the person is and their commitment to the organization, you need to perk up and hear it. Some people like to complain. Some people always have a problem, and maybe those are the people you discount their feedback. Constituency is an important aspect as well.
Attentive and watching. I think you kind of covered some in one of, you know, of communicating. But one thing that we have found beneficial that we have begun is aside from board meeting, scheduled board meeting, monthly board meeting, is that of planning meetings, where it's just more of an open discussion format. And that gives room for, as Ken was referring, where you bring that, in a sense, the table is open for the oddball question that, you know, probably nobody else is seeing this. Nobody else is maybe considering this, but it does give way to that. So kind of cultivating that communication of open concern, new concern.
Okay, thank you. A couple of things I noted here. Who actually has to acknowledge something isn't working? You realize things don't work sometimes, and someone actually has to say it. This is not working. The thing of laying it on the table, you know, that feeling, something isn't right here, and maybe I don't even quite know what it is, but something isn't right. Who has to lay it on the table? Somebody actually has to lay it on the table. And then as far as when something isn't working, like they found at Fresh Start, there's a reason why doors close. Doors close because God wants you to do something else. And you keep butting your head against the door that's closing, you might actually be moving against the will of God. Third question that we have. If a specific person is influencing a ministry in an unhealthy way, how do you deal with that? Does it depend on who the person is? What if it's a board member? What if it's your key administrator that you really can't replace? What if it's just a lowly BSer, you know? What do you do if you've got a problem with a person? I'm going to start with Tim here.
So as we think of conflict issues, problem issues, whatever it may be, I would just observe that our staff teams are the most valuable resource of any ministry. Without staff, the ministry isn't going to move forward. And so that calls us to be redemptive with the approaches that we use in working with people. I'm told that more people leave missions due to interpersonal conflict than for any other reason. And so that highlights the importance of this question. Practically speaking, from Fresh Start's perspective, we do a biannual discussion time with each of our staff as part of our staff training program. And I find there, if we listen well, and if a particular, one of the questions on our form is, who on the staff team do I have the most conflict with? And I find if we listen well, and if one person's name is mentioned by several different staff people, we probably ought to give some attention to that. And so it creates an opportunity to work from. Also within that, I think there's multiple levels that we can address things from. I've had a situation where, as an administrator, I've had to go to an individual on our staff and just say, you know, would you consider, how does this appear to someone else? Just last week, I went to one of our newer staff members, and it was an issue with dress code, according to our policy, a very small issue. And in a matter of 60 seconds, we had an issue resolved. But communication, as Daryl was talking, very practical. Sometimes you have issues that go much deeper than that and that require require us to provide some ongoing input into a person's life to calculate change. We've had situations where within that, and as we've mentored and as we've discussed, and we just didn't see the change that we really were desiring, and where we even suggest in a few cases that a person leave ministry for a time and go somewhere to get some input, some direct input into their life. Sometimes that can get fairly messy. When you get to conflict with me as an administrator or, you know, someone in a leadership role, I think those things are probably best to go to the board. And so I see different levels, possibility of some peer input, administrative input, and certainly the place for board input. So sometimes it becomes complicated. Another complication that we see is many times you have ministries interwoven with family relationships and within church relationships. And so those things can get a little messy, and it's good to be able to reflect to the board for some of those decisions. Just a final concluding thought, relationship is more important to me than everything being done just right. When relationship breaks down, when there's no communication, there's also no opportunity to address things.
Daryl?
The understanding the person, their tendencies, and understanding each other, and I think Tim kind of concluded with that, and just dealing with it, not hastily, but promptly. It needs to be discussed. It needs to be addressed. It's not going to go away. We had a situation where it looked very impossible. We had a pretty predicted outcome, however, we took some time to that and made some decisions of how we will handle it. And at this point, it looks very positive, like we'll have a very positive outcome of that. And it was not necessarily clearing misunderstandings. There's probably going to, there'll be some limitations as to that individual's reach of who and contacts that they will have. However, it really has the appearance of just simply a misunderstanding of what they were to be communicating, and it needed to be done. There was concern and apprehension in making that confrontation. However, those things need to be done, and they need to be dealt with. It's not, in ministry, we're not exempt from those challenges. Another part of that in dealing with the staff on the field that we have been involved in as a board, where we have three times a year where we have a board member visit the field and meet with each individual staff person. And that's been very healthy. That's one of the things that we're looking at, kind of a transition, not necessarily a course correction, but transitioning where the administrator will be on each field each year and do more of that one-on-one sit down with each person, sort of as Tim was referencing, to hear from them, and if there is challenges, tell us about it up front rather than when it becomes larger.
Ken?
Well, it depends, to answer the question, who addresses those staff issues. Of course, I see the administrator who be the first person to have to deal with it, or the CEO or principal, or however the organization is structured. However, through that process, the board needs to be very supportive of the administrator and give him backing. I can recall a situation where the organization was like it was for 20 years, and its size and structure was just working well, and they expanded, and job responsibilities got divvied out, and a staff person got more authority and responsibility. And the individual took this, I'd say, to the extreme, and eventually it morphed into the point where the person felt like is no longer accountable to the administrator, and it came to the board level. And what I see that it boiled down to is its job descriptions, responsibilities were given out as the organization grew. The structure was never articulated. Who's accountable to who? And so it gave opportunity for, as Tim mentioned, people with are extremely zealous and take things in their own hands. And it got so to the point where this person hired people that weren't constituency, and things just compounded. There was breakdown in communication. So in the process, we did get a third party in, and we created job descriptions, a flow chart, accountability structure. It was a long process, which could have been avoided had the board done more legwork in establishing that. But to correct it is painful, and it leaves reverberates down through the years. And over that time, the board had to be engaged with the administrator, and it's redemptive. It's encouraging to be redemptive, but it takes a lot of communication, a lot of prayer, and a lot can be eliminated with those situations. And I'm thinking more of when it's growth involved, and that's maybe another subject, but opportunity I have seen has caused more issues when we jump into opportunities and jump into growth without taking a little time and thinking about how we're going to structure ourselves, who's accountable to who, how much money is it going to take, and when we get to these pitfalls, who's going to shore up who to make us through.
Redemptive was a word that was used in the beginning, okay, for who we are, the type of organization that we are. It ought to be first nature that when we're going to correct course, it's going to be redemptive, everything within our power. And then it came out here at the end with Ken, but really in our discussions leading up to this, that it's kind of like, I wish you could have heard all those. There was a principle that came through. Opportunity without structure equals danger. Opportunity is a new mission field. It's an invitation to do this. Opportunity is money that fell into your lap. Opportunity is a piece of property that came to you. Opportunity is a high capacity staff person who walks onto your team, and you've got more horsepower than you ever had. But opportunity without structure, job descriptions, mission statement, plan, markers, budget, opportunity without structure is going to equal danger, where you're going to end up. The fourth question, this Daryl will start with this question here, and then the others pitch in as they can. What are better ways to address issues before open strife is the result? Can you give any examples of interventions that resolved a deviation from the ministry goals while preserving or even increasing the value of the person that caused the problem? So this is a question we're going to go on maybe a little different areas here, but how do you resolve problems before they hit you between the eyes? How are you a little more proactive about it? Daryl, anything you can start with there?
I think we touched on some of that earlier, the being alert and being attentive to what is happening so that we can see these. And obviously, if we can prevent a problem, I think Ken just mentioned that, is it's much easier to work with something when we have that structure in place and are prepared for that. Some of the challenges that we have seen, and as we've seen those developed, is being willing to invest the time that it takes to understand that and to hear that out, to hear the individuals. And so I think we need to be prepared, either as administrative team or if it is the board's place to do that, but be able to be prepared to have that time to hear the strife, because there will be challenges that come, and we need to be alert and willing to do that. There's times where we may need to make some changes. And I think one of the key things that can get in the way, while we need that structure, we need to have a willingness to change. And it really has to have the heart of openness to avoid that that strife. Where we've seen challenge is where we've filled a position maybe with someone who really shouldn't have been in that position. And so there's challenge that comes there. And probably for us, one of the larger challenging situations that we dealt with as that challenge was unraveling for us, there was different directions or thoughts of where the board, how the board desired to handle that and how the staff desired to handle that. We felt we wanted in our thought, it was a more redemptive process rather than dealing as harshly with that. And what we chose to do in that situation, I think Ken mentioned also, but to have two outside individuals as far as directly related to it, both had previous experience with that church setting and both were very knowledgeable of the setting. However, they were not a part of the board. They were not a part of the staff. And we had those two individuals who on our part and their part was a rather large investment of time and energies. And that proved very beneficial in bringing that outside in. There was, I would say, from all avenues, we had support of those individuals. And what they did is hear everyone out and bring back some direction for us as a board. And where we find that situation today, I think there's a healing taking place that's continuing. And so I feel like we are on the right direction of building a healthy relationship there. We continue to provide in some ways for that local body of believers, even though their desire was to be somewhat different than where we want it to be, standards-wise and where we thought the church should be headed direction. But we chose to support them in some ways. And so I would say, again, early, quickly, and being having that flexibility to say that, as Richie mentioned, to be willing to say that something is wrong and we do need to make a change.
Okay. Briefly, Tim?
As we think of these levels of conflict or difference, hurting people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And it takes two to have a tangle. And so as we think of dismissing a someone from our staff team, there's always residue. It's not always as pretty as we might think. Just because an individual leaves your organization does not say that their influence will leave the organization. And I believe that as administration and as board members, we need to be willing to account for that. It's also important to discern, are we actually dealing with the right person? Remember I said it takes two to conflict.
Ken?
Yeah, well, I support what the brethren both said. The third party, using a third party, you need to be very careful who you select that third party to be. We had an experience where a third party, a consultant was hired, and they were hired simply because the one party that that was involved in this conflict was on a committee, and the business was willing to pay for the consultant that they use, and it was a secular consultant, and I felt uncomfortable from the start. But you know, when you do that, when you bring those secular people in and they don't have Anabaptist values, you really put yourself to risk because they don't see it like you see it.
And when you start compromising your values for professionalism, you've lost your significance. And I guess I just say that to say, when you bring a third party in, you really want to be sure that their heart is where your heart is.
We got two questions left. We got about 9 minutes, 8 minutes left. I want to give more weight to this next question than to the last one. The next question is, how do you decide how much weight to give to concerns coming from constituency, and how do you communicate well with concerned constituency? Are you going to be hearing from people? Okay? Which ones should you really ought to be listening to? Ken, you're starting off here. Hearing from constituents.
Well, the structure of the organization has a lot to do with it. If you're in an organization where it's church controlled, or I should say church, strictly a congregation that it's their mission, then the board has accountability to the church ministry. But in most of the boards I'm on, it's a blend of churches. So those churches, those people in those churches, those volunteers, those people that give money, those people that attend meetings, those people that you know are really serious about what's going on, you need to be deliberate into hearing how do they feel about what we're doing? How do they feel about, do they still have trust in us? Trust can be lost gradually, and you don't know you're losing it until something happens and it's not, you can't gain it back. You don't want to be in that position. So you need to communicate with your constituency. When you don't have your constituency, they're your boss. You need to realize that they can cut the funds off and you're done. And if they stop praying for you, you're at a disadvantage. So you need to know who they are. And sometimes, depending who your organization is, that may be a little challenging. Who are my constituency? And that discussion needs to happen with the board, is my perspective.
Darryl, and then Tim.
I think in relating to constituency is communicate open and honest. There'll be times where maybe you need to present something that didn't go as planned. And so if you have the opportunity to present that, you can present that before it comes as a complaint or as a concern from the constituency. And I think the other is that you have, you know, an understanding of who that comes from. I think earlier Ken mentioned of, you know, is it the person that tends to always have rosy ideas, or in other terms, is just a complainer, complains about things. So evaluate the weight of that concern. And if it does seem to be valid, I think there are those who you know that you can go ask. We've heard this concern from some individuals. Is it valid? Is it what you see as a supporting person? So I think there's, you know, those individuals that maybe they're not going to be the first ones to call and talk to you, but would be a resource to go you asking them. Not looking for trouble, but a reliable source of someone to go seek counsel from.
I'll just go to a practical example. We are in the counseling ministry. The work of counseling as a whole, not only Fresh Start, but I think as a whole, received a fair bit of criticism over the last number of years regarding teaching, regarding counseling practice, regarding theology of counseling. And so those things were deeply affected outside view of counseling altogether. And so as we looked at that, Fresh Start would have always said that, you know, we are biblical in what we do. But we stopped and considered. We stopped and looked. And the reality was, when we evaluated, we were maybe not quite as biblical as we would have presented ourselves to be. And so as we evaluated that, our board looked at it, we discussed it, hours and hours went into that project, but we came out the other side recognizing that there are three levels of counseling. There's secular, there's Christian, and then there's biblical. And so we adapted some changes to our teaching program. We adapted some changes to our counseling. We adapted some changes to our staff training approach. And the result was that the critique from the constituency brought about a purification of the ministry. And I believe we are bettered for it.
Okay, thank you. Maybe 2 points to make there, you know, for your ministry, whatever it is you do, who is your core constituency? Mm-hmm. There's different ways you can evaluate constituency, but core constituency is very simply defined as the people who without them you are dead. Mm-hmm. You are dead without these people. And if these people come with a concern, you better would have both your ears open right now. And then secondly, once an issue is laid on the table, okay, Ken used that expression, someone needs to lay it on the table. Someone comes and they lay an issue on the table, you evaluate its core constituency, so this is someone we ought to be listening to. A good thing is to go to some other of those core constituency, some of those key people that you know this person does represent this group. If they have this opinion, probably half of the people in their church or 90% of the people in their church have this opinion. And then go to them and lay the issue on the table with them. You need a little bit of private counsel here. This concern was raised. I've seen it. And you might just get an earful back right away, and you know you've got an issue to deal with. The last question we have is, do you utilize a person who is marginal constituency or out of constituency? Sometimes you have a position that needs to be filled. Maybe it has been empty for a while and you're hurting. Maybe it has special qualifications and they aren't growing on trees. And here comes one and the person is marginal. They're not right where you're at. Or they're not where you're at all. Dare you use them? If so, under what conditions? Ken is starting here and then the other two finishing up. We have about 3 minutes.
Yeah, I probably would think about sacrificing your core values when you're doing that. It depends on the position you're filling, I think, would have some bearing on it. But I would be very reluctant to bring in someone that isn't constituency or isn't right. You don't feel right about it. You're better off suffering with the vacancy, in my opinion, than to deal with the ramifications that you don't know might come out of this. Once you hire a person, and they're on staff, they're going to influence. It don't matter what position they're going to influence, it's going to make an impression. And then you're going to say, I wish I wouldn't have hired the person. Now what am I going to do?
That's terrible.
I think on that thought, there's aspects of positions to fill that can be trained, and there's other aspects of it that can't be trained. And I would say for us as an organization, we would err on the side of staying within someone who can fully support who we are. If they can't fully support who you are as an organization, they're not going to be able to be a full team player. And as Ken said, once you have them, and it's for practical terms, it's harder to get rid of them than it is to not have them. Or to deal with the challenges that come.
Tim? I'd just say that there's differences in constituency. Maybe another issue that goes along with that is character qualifications. And so maybe the constituency is right, but the character qualifications aren't quite there. Should produce a danger zone for us, a red flag.
Great comment. If you're going to hire someone, you accept the responsibility to fire that person. That gives you a little more pause when you hire, if you know you're the person responsible to fire. And then a proactiveness. There's some headhunting going on this weekend. There are people here looking over the crowd, and they might even be looking at the person who works for you, wondering if they would change sides. That's kind of a shame in a way. We need to be more proactive. If you have positions that require some skill, require some experiences, then maybe you need to find a young person and grow them and invest in them so that you have your own crop coming. Well, we speak of it as timber. Are you growing any timber in your forest? Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming, and a special thank to Ken and to Daryl and to Tim for being here. Have a good day.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.